TV.
Hello, everybody. End of the week. This is Martin Sender. Same Martin Sender that was here at the beginning of the week. Yeah, I did the 32 miles yesterday, and it was really a buzz. I mean, there is such a thing as a runner's high. It's like I looked forward to every loop. I have an 8-mile loop, and I did it 4 times. And after the show yesterday, I went on that evening loop, and it really felt great. I was looking forward to it, and I really could have run all night. I felt that energy, and there's such a thing as a runner's high, and it is like it being intoxicated, really. But today's like the hangover. It's like you pay for everything. It's hard to imagine that you would have a pleasurable time running 8 hours, but I did. But again, today I woke up, I wasn't like terribly sore, but for sure I got up a little slower, so like, okay, crap. And then just that malaise, just the feeling of tiredness. It's the hangover from the run. It's so weird how you can feel so good. It's just like alcohol. You feel so good, you feel great, you're on top of the world. And then the next morning, oh, what happened? So I'm doing the best I can today. This time I had the presence of mind to bring whiskey to the table. Yes, I do think ahead once in a while. It's handy. What I'm going to do is, since it's Friday, I need to close the loop that I started. Don't know when I started it, but I've been reading quotes from A.E. Nock that are so good, and I want to finish his quotes. And I've been promising you a quote from E.W. Bollinger, who was a contemporary of A.E. Nock. He's famous for the Companion Bible. If you've never heard of the Companion Bible, it's a King James version, which sucks, but Bollinger has notes in the back, and he's a very deep thinker. And A.E. Nock, actually, when Nock was a young man, like in his 20s, he wrote Bollinger a detailed study on baptism. And because of this young whippersnapper, Nock, the elder statesman, Dr. Bollinger, changed his position on baptism. I guess he thought baptism was required, or there had to be baptism in water. Nock made the case, based on the two evangels, that there's only one baptism. So it kind of reminds me of the first century when I think of like the meeting in Jerusalem, the Jerusalem Council, the clash of the Titans, like Peter and Paul talking together. But these were two peaceful men. I mean, this was Paul post Damascus experience. He was a lot more peaceful then. Before that, he would have killed Peter. But these two became friends. And I would love to have been a fly on the wall at the Jerusalem Council, or just to see Peter and Paul walking to that assembly. Like, are you ready for this, Paul? Yeah, I think I'm ready for this. Good to have you on my side. Well, it's nice that you're on board. You believe me, right, Peter? Yeah, I totally get it. You want to go for a beer afterwards? Yeah, no matter what these people say, let's go for a beer afterwards. I just love this fellowship. This actually happened. I mean, these people existed. It's just hard to imagine sometimes when I saw all these Bible people on stained glass at my Catholic church my whole life, and then it's hard to think of them as real people, but they were. So continuing with the topic of Christianity being the world's biggest cult, the world's largest deception, and the breeding place of sin and idolatry. You know, and I'm getting tired of hearing it myself. It's just the mood I'm in today. I'm tired of hearing about it. But I'm going to read other people's writing, and we're going to get something out of it. I am totally not inspired today. Okay, my issues here after the surgery still continue to bother me. I think part of the reason I'm planning this run on Thursday, and after a couple days rest, I'll be good to go. But I think I want to prove to myself that I'm stronger after the surgery than before. It's almost like it's a resistance. It's giving the middle finger to mortality, to age, even though nobody's ever beat age, but you can fight it and you can claim some victories over it. And I felt just like yesterday, running 32 miles was a victory over being 66 years old. And I think also that the reason I run, let me just say this. I've been meaning to say this. I hope this helps somebody. I feel that God's given me the secret of self-propulsion, like the form, the mechanics, the body mechanics. And now that I understand the key, I feel that I'm obligated to use the talent God gave me. Okay. So I feel the same way in the evangel. God gave me a talent to write. And I never would have imagined it in a million years because I started my whole life. But he gave me a talent for teaching, for communicating. It doesn't mean everybody agrees with me, but I think I'm fairly decent at making myself clear, driving ambiguity out the door. You love me or hate me, you get it or you don't. And I always hold myself responsible if someone doesn't understand. The worst thing that can happen after one of my talks is if somebody comes up to me and says, what exactly were you trying to say? No, that nobody has ever done that except in a joking way. Tony Nungester did that to me one time in Baldwin, Michigan, small chapel up there. Tony's watching, he might remember this. This is probably 97, 98. I'm teaching, sweating, just pouring my heart out, just got my whiteboard and my marker. I'm just nailing some point, writing down the scriptures. And afterwards, I'm completely exhausted and I finished the talk, said a little closing prayer. Tony Nungesser walks up to me and he says, Martin, so what exactly are we trying to say? And in his deadpan way, completely deadpan humor, Tony Nungesser. And at first, he had me going for a second. I'm like, what? And then he had that little wry smile at the corner of his mouth. So, yeah, that's the worst thing you can say to me. What exactly is that guy trying to say? But it's this, I feel that, well, there's a scripture verse, to whom much is given, much is expected. Much. I feel like I've been given much. And the running does parallel for me. It's a parallel experience of endurance. I might as well just talk about this. We don't have to endure to the end to be saved, okay? But I feel that I am being called upon to endure in the teaching. I feel like I cannot take a day off. Even though I'm entitled to one, I need one. But the problem is, I think if I take a day off, I'll end up taking a month off because I'm so overwhelmed sometimes. But that's why I'm not going to do it, because I that's the way I feel. If I take one day off, then it's all going to come crumbling down. So I want to continue to the end. Somebody kicked my ass. He knows who he is. This was about 7 years ago. I was still living in the laundry room at Juliana's house. And I told this brother on the phone, I said, you know what? I think I'm going to take some time off. I'm just so, I feel the burden of the responsibility of teaching. And I know everybody, you know, loves my work and they need to hear from me every day, but the pressure's getting to be much. I think I'm going to take a couple of days off. And I'm on the phone with this guy. He says, you're going to what? He says, you have the greatest job in the world. You don't have to like drive down I-95 to work and risk your life on the highway and work with idiots at the office, though someday that sounds refreshing actually. But he sat me down metaphorically and he gave me a Vince Lombardi / Newt Rockne / General George Patton speech. And I mean, it was a spanking. And he said it in such a loving way, but there was no doubt about it. Like, day off my ass. It was that kind of a thing. And I took that to heart. And I never had a day off since. Never took a day off. Because of that. Because that was God speaking to me. Like, I have given you much. I have put you in a position of teaching. And so you will teach, and you will go, and you will do with this like what you've done with your running. And here's the parallel. I started running at age 9. I don't know what happened. I do know what happened, but it was like a lightning bolt struck from heaven. It was the 1968 Summer Olympics. I was 9 years old, and my family always watched the Olympics. And it must have been the 1,500 meters. And I remember the competitor. It was Jim Ryan, the famous American miler out of Kansas. And we were watching the nightly broadcast. So it was 8, 9 o'clock at night. It was already dark out. It was summer, the Summer Olympics. So it was lighter later in Ohio. This was in Canton, Ohio. And I'm watching Jim Ryan running the 1,500 meters, going around this track. And it was like I got struck by lightning. I didn't even think. I just said, I got to go outside and run. I went outside, didn't change my clothes. Nobody knew anything about running clothes or running shoes or all this whole industry based around running. I just knew I had to move. I had to run. And I went outside and I ran around my house. Not just the house, but the property line. It wasn't huge, but it was a decently sized neighborhood. Probably took me 2-3 minutes to go around once. And I never run in my life like that. And I just, after watching Jim Ryan in the, Mexico City Summer Olympics, I'm going around the house 10 times. I think my dad came out. No, you know what? Maybe I did. I didn't even tell them what I was doing. Maybe they thought I went to my room or something. But it's pitch black, and I remember this to this day. I'm running around the house, and I counted 10 times. And then when I went in, breathing like this, I said, what the hell did you do? I just ran around the house 10 times. Why? I don't really know. And then later, when I was 16 or 17, I had heard of a kid in grade school who would run a mile before school every day. This was the craziest thing we ever heard. This was like, is this guy a Marine or something? Like, I'm in the sixth grade. And this kid's name was Jeff Halter. And the word had it that he would run a mile before school every day. I mean, running a mile sounded outrageous. We'd never heard of such a thing. Run a mile? Why would anybody run a mile? But Jeff Halter was a legend because of this. And then I don't remember anything really kicking in after I ran around the house 10 times, but the bug was in me. And then the next time the thread links together for me is I'm 14. So there's 5 years there that I can't account for, really. But I started to run a mile a day. And my parents knew I was running a mile a day. And then one night, I got it in my head that I'm going to run 6 miles. Nobody ran 6 miles. 6 miles was crazy. And I remember I had a mile loop, and I'm doing it 6 times, and my dad comes out in his car with a neighbor. He pulls up next to me, goes, what the hell are you doing? My dad was a very loving guy, but he said, get in this car. They really thought I was going to die. They thought I was going to have a heart attack. Because nobody, what are you doing? I'm running six miles. What? Nobody ran 6 miles back in 73, or, you know, except Olympic athletes. Those are the only people that did it. So my dad wanted to drag me in the car, but I said, no, I have to finish. No, you're not going to finish. Get in this car. I got to finish. And all my episodes were always solo episodes. So I finished. I disobeyed my father. I ran. I don't think he was too happy about it. I had to finish. Sense of completion. And I can't explain any of it, except it's all of God. And it has to do with endurance. It has to do with finishing what you start. Finishing. We have got to finish. All of us have to finish. And the running is a reflection. Paul uses that analogy. A sister brought this up about how Paul talks about running a race, competing to win a prize. Running a race. I get it. I mean, I have run some races. I'm a solo guy. I invent my own solo enterprises, but I have run 5 marathons and a couple of 10Ks and a 5K somewhere along the line. But I'm not generally a race guy. I haven't run an organized race in decades. But Paul does compare the evangel. And I don't think he was specifically talking. He was talking to Timothy, yes, but I think it applies to all of us. We are here to endure. We don't have to endure. I want to make this very clear. We do not have to endure to be saved. We endure because the Spirit of God is in us. I've had people ask me about suicide. What happens if I kill myself? And I said, you're not going to lose your salvation. You can't. Now, I'm not going to talk about ruling and reigning here, but, well, why shouldn't I? Just because 3 people disagree with me, I'm not going to teach on it. I think you remember I told you a sister of mine was, not my biological sister, but a sister in Christ, was going to kill herself and told me how she was going to do it on Tuesday when her husband was at work. She was very serious. She had an illness that was debilitating and doctors couldn't solve the problem. She was getting worse and worse and worse, and she'd had it. She said, what do I stand to lose? And I took her to 2 Timothy 2:12. You know, I said, he is faithful to himself, so he cannot disown his own body, but will be disowned for ruling and reigning if we fail to endure. I'm completely paraphrasing 2 Timothy 2:12-13. Read it to you for yourself. It's there. And that got to her. The endurance part got to her. We don't have to endure to be saved, but there is a reward to be had, contrary to some contrarians who don't think anybody's going to get any rewards, don't listen to them, they're completely wrong, to endurance. But even if there's not, there's something sweet about staying to the end. There's something special. And again, if you haven't been given this, then you can sit down and rest and take it easy and not talk to anybody about the evangel, because it's not given you. But if it's given you, and I believe this is one of those transadministrational truths, to whom much is given, much is expected. This is just between me and God. I'm not telling you God's expecting anything of you, okay? But I will say this of myself, and I believe this to be true. God is expecting me to finish the course. And Paul rejoiced. Paul said, I have kept the faith. He was happy about it at the end of his life. What does he say in 2 Timothy? I have kept the faith. There's something to that. Because I have known people who have abandoned the faith. More people than I care to count and care to think about. People who have abandoned the faith. They've abandoned Paul. They've abandoned me. They've abandoned Paul's evangel. They won't even talk to me. They have completely abandoned it. What does our apostle say? There must be something valuable about it, or he wouldn't say it. I have kept the faith. I have fought the good fight, and there is laid up for me a wreath of righteousness. I have fought the good fight. It compares the evangel, the heralding thereof, compares it to a race, compares it to a boxing match, uses sporting analogies all the time. And God introduced me to running and then to bicycling. It's the same thing. It's just put your head down and gut through and go and go and go and go. And God's grace is inside of it. I felt God's grace inside of it last night. I could go and go and go, and I felt this physical power that will keep going. I'm going to put that to the test on Thursday in an attempt to run 72 miles in one day. I'm going to put it to the test. If I fail, so what? I'm going to fail boldly. I'm going to fail trying madly. I'm not in love with it, but I'm in like with it, because it's good for me. And it is a reflection of holding the line, of finishing it, of enduring, And it's so freaking boring sometimes. Not this job, but sometimes it feels like a duty. Other times it's an inspiration. Usually when I turn on this camera, I'll be honest with you, when I turn on this camera, it feels like a duty. It's not until 2 or 3 minutes go by that I feel the pleasure, I feel the beautiful grit, the lovely intoxicant of work, of connecting with you. But sometimes to push that record button is one of the hardest things to do, and I don't want to do it. Many times I don't want to do it, but I trust that the Spirit of God will kick in. And when I start a run and I feel like crap, and it's 5:30 in the morning, I just start to go, and I'm like, and this really stinks. 5 minutes later, the juices start to flow. Call it the second wind. I pray to God that we get a second wind, because we're all exhausted. I've watched many videos of runners. I keep jumping from one to the other because I think it's the same. For me, it's the same. One's physical, one's spiritual, but it's the same grit. It's the same guts. It's the same being given a gift and using it. And using it, we've all felt like we can't do anymore. And I've watched so many videos of runners and endurance people who say that their body feels done, like they're completely finished, they can't go another step. They sit down, they get a drink of water, or they eat a Milky Way bar, my personal favorite, and they stretch a little bit, and then they get up and they're renewed. They feel this second wind, third wind, fourth wind, fifth wind. It just keeps coming. And it's just a matter of taking a breather, of resting, stopping for a little bit, and then the body is recuperative, amazing recuperative powers. And the spirit also has amazing recuperative powers. It's not that the spirit itself needs to recuperate, but the Spirit of God within us will renew us in the most dire circumstances, right when you feel like you can't go on. And I've heard this quote from several endurance people. And it's, you can always do more than you think you can do. You can always do more than you think you can do. But the problem is we rarely ever call on ourselves to do that. We're rarely ever in the situation where we have to go beyond our comfort zone. I guess I can't even recommend you go beyond your comfort zone because it sucks so bad. I'm not going to tell anybody to do what I do. But I find that when I go out of my comfort zone, it's always rewarding. It's just hard to get out of it. It's like you have to blast out of it. You really do. It takes such a push to beat inertia. Inertia is a killer. I am as susceptible to inertia as anyone else. An object remains in place until acted upon by an outside force. I mean, I have to be acted upon by an outside force, even if it's guilt. Even if it's remembering that guy's speech on the phone to me. You can't take a day off. We need you. That type of thing. You can't take a day off. We need you. My God, they need me. They need me. Boom, I'm going to push that button. I don't know what the hell I'm going to say, but I'm going to push the button. That's how I felt today. And look what's happening. I'm talking about something I didn't even realize I was going to talk about. Push the button, and I'll take care of you. Not that God's not into pushing of the button. He's into that, too. But that's just fake it till you make it. That's a good one. I've got a lot of use out of that saying. Fake it till you make it. On a run, you fake it till you make it. It's like, now here it is, here it is. And then once you get going, I could go all night. I was feeling that last night. I could go all night. Today, I'm thinking, thank God I decided to take a day off. I just hate it. I hate it. But if I went out and just started hobbling around within 5 minutes, I'd be in the zone again. I don't know. What is it? God keeps reviving us. So it's no shame to be exhausted. It's no shame to think you're throwing in the towel, to think you're quitting, to think you're done, to have enough, to complain. For God's sake, complain. If you can't tell your maker what's happening to you, who can you tell? Complain, complain, complain. Paul said, don't complain. I know, but, you know, it's, okay, sorry, Paul, can't do that one, okay? No, your ace said, don't be murmuring. That's right. I'm not murmuring, I'm complaining. There's a difference. Ranting, that's even better. That's not murmuring. That's the opposite of murmuring. Murmuring is you're not really being honest. Paul does teach against murmuring. Murmuring is like, you know, like that dog, like that Muttley, whatever. Remember that cartoon dog? That's murmuring. Don't murmur. Say it out loud. God damn piece of fucking shit. Say it out loud. Don't murmur. Complain. Let it rip. God likes that. No murmuring. No murmuring out there. Well, who do you think you're hiding from? Oh, God can't translate that? You're kidding me, right? Say it out loud. I do it on my run. Oh man, it's great. I love it. I do it to God all the time. I'm so honest with him. If I haven't been struck by lightning, you never will be. I can tell you that. So, God has given us all gifts. We have different gifts. Some have more than others, but some have gifts that I don't have. I have gifts that other people don't have. And when we exercise these gifts, we're used to our capacity. Some people have great capacity. Some people have smaller capacity. Who cares? It's working to your capacity. And then Paul says that great line in Romans 12, do not be overweening above what your disposition must be. In other words, don't try to strain to be somebody you're not or to do something you're not meant to do. Most of you are not meant to attempt to run 72 miles. God bless you. You're not meant to do that. You're meant to do something I can't do, to babysit or to adopt a child or to make a meatloaf. My God, I have no idea how to make a meatloaf. I would just as soon die. I don't like to eat it either, so I sure as hell wouldn't make one. But you get the point. So do your thing. And when you feel like giving up, sit down, eat a Milky Way bar, get a breath, listen to your favorite song, and regroup. Because I swear to you, by the Spirit of God, you can do more than you think you can do.